The views and opinions expressed in the Distracted Librarians podcast do not necessarily reflect those of Bloomfield Township, Bloomfield Township Public Library, Bloomfield Community Television, the Birmingham Area Cable Board, or its producers or production staff.
Hello and welcome. We're the Distracted Librarians, your friendly neighborhood bookworms who can't resist the siren call of movies, video games, music, and everything else in the pop culture universe.
Think of this podcast as a digital campfire where we share our latest obsessions, analyze the hidden depths of our favorite distractions, and maybe rediscover the joy of reading in between.
So, if you're a fellow media junkie, a book lover, or someone looking for a fun, engaging escape from your daily grind, you've come to the right place.
Sit back, relax, and prepare to get delightfully distracted with us.
All right, so today we are going to talk about book, movie, show adaptations. All right, so we know that there are some good ones. We know there are some excellent ones. We know that there are some really, really bad ones.
Really bad ones.
And we know that most people have opinions
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to talk about our opinions today and maybe even pick apart some other people's opinions. So, all right. So successful adaptations. Let's maybe, like, what is a good way that we can, like, what makes something successful? What do you guys think?
I think it's so hard to even begin to quantify that, just because, like, for some people it's only successful if it is completely faithful to the source material, and then someone else might be like, as long as it's a good movie or show on its own, like, it doesn't matter if it's faithful to the original. And I don't know which side of the line of that I fall on. I think it's so situational.
I was both of those people at different times. I used to be very, very book faithful, and it needs to hit all of the elements that I loved about the book in order for me to consider it a good movie. And as more things have come out, and as I've gotten, honestly, a little less pretentious, not that is a pretentious take, but, like, for me, it was a pretentious take. Just treating it as a good movie is enough.
Well, I think we know what happens when a director follows the book to the absolute T, and then you end up with, like, a 3-hour movie, and then the director's cut is, like, 4.5 hours, and we are all sitting around going, we don't have time for that. Could you just make the movie?
There are so many things that I would watch, like, the 8-12 hours that it would take to fully tell the story, though. Okay, I absolutely
fair
would.
Okay. Fair enough.
Well, and I think that's what a lot of the shows are doing now, is to cater to that desire to see the whole thing.
Yes, absolutely. Well, and I'm glad that they have that available for the people that are interested.
Yeah.
Right? Because they do know that there are people out there that are going to want to see every little minutia of the entire thing.
Yeah. And even then, some of the shows make major changes to storylines for the sake of getting as much into a season as they can, because who knows how many seasons they're going to get.
Exactly. That's true. So what makes a crappy, can I say crappy?
You can say crappy.
A terrible adaptation, which I think we're talking, that's it right there, right? A little bit of that, where we don't know what's going to happen in the future, therefore we're going to hack this to bits and pieces.
I feel, and this is sort of not really related. Well, it is a little. Like, things like, and this isn't film, but, like, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, for example. That's not an adaptation. That's sort of a framing device, I think, where it's just like, here's the bare bones of the story, and let's totally change it, which I understand. I get it. It's not that I don't understand. I understand. I just hate it. And I think that for me, like, book to film adaptations are like, I see what you were doing, and I see that it's kind of the story, but it's so incorrect, or they've done so many things to change it that it's barely the same situation. Like, one example that I can think of is the what is it, like, 1930s Frankenstein?
Okay.
They changed the names of, like, they changed Victor's name.
Oh.
Why?
Yeah.
He's Henry Frankenstein, and his best friend is Victor Clerval.
What?
No.
What on earth?
You can't. And there's a lot of reasons narratively why you can't do that.
Yeah.
But the point is that why did you, like, they were referencing other literature when they named them those people's names, and then you changed it for what?
Yeah.
Why? That's an example to me of, like, of a change that doesn't make sense. So, and I think that's kind of a hallmark of a bit, like, there, I don't know. I'm not gonna get into a Frankenstein rant. I'm sorry.
I think my least successful movie adaptations are the ones where they try to Hollywoodize it too much.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. That's kind of, yes.
Yeah. It's the Percy Jackson movie, the Aragon movie, the Ready Player One movie, mm-hmm. where they take these stories that function well because of what they have and try and put these giant, like, cinematic moments into it, and then all of the lead up has to build to that cinematic moment instead of what the book was trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, you know,
so making things, like, more epic than what it needed to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that.
I think there's also failings where they'll try to take something that simply is too big for the format that they're putting it into, and so then in shrinking it down into that, when they pick what they're going to put into the movie, they're not connecting those things well because they've taken out all the things that connect them.
Sure.
So it's like you have this story that you are now taking down into this movie that is, instead of being a story, a series of scenes that you only can connect if you've read the book.
Yes.
Because all of the stuff that connects it is gone.
That drives me nuts. Well, and I think, too, it's more than just, it wasn't like this in the book, where the book is just the vehicle for the story. Mm-hmm. So what we're talking about really is the way the story was originally told included this element. And it went from point A to point B, and it connected this way, and however you want to go through all of that. When the adaptation sort of skirts those things and starts telling the story in a different way, or in a way that doesn't make sense without having first, you know, reading the book, for example, mm-hmm. that I don't think is a good adaptation, because if you have to, like, study before you read the thing,
sure,
in order for it to make sense, or, oh, it's an adaptation of a book that people who have read the book will like because they've read the book, but what about the people who haven't read it?
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, that's not providing a narrative in a way that's accessible to a new audience. Mm-hmm. So.
And I think there are ways to do that, to pull pieces out of it that work, mm-hmm. if what you're pulling out is its own narrative arc.
Yes.
I look at the Red, White, and Royal Blue movie that came out over the past summer. Mm-hmm. You know, the book is this very rich, like, family story, political story, in addition to the love story. Mm-hmm. And they just made that movie the best rom-com and took the rest of that out.
Yeah.
And... Oh. I'm not mad at it, because what they made a movie that they were trying to make.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they did that element of it very well. And you can still get the richer story from the book. You know, there's no way that a 90-minute movie is going to have the same narrative depth that a 400-page novel is going to have.
Right, right.
But you have to make the movie make sense within itself.
I think the key is it still has to tell a good story.
Yes.
And when you get so stuck on staying true to the book, but do so in a way that takes out key storytelling elements, and you lose that train of the story, mm-hmm. that's when it becomes a bad adaptation.
Mm-hmm. Or what about the adaptations that just change a part of it altogether? And, like, the example that I can think of was when Hannibal came out, the Hannibal the movie, the people that made the movie decided that the ending shouldn't be the ending, and they changed it. And yeah. Anybody who read the book was like, but wait.
Yeah.
He wrote it that way. And if he doesn't know the characters and what they're supposed to do, then who does? Certainly not you movie people. Like, what's that all about?
Right, yeah. Yeah.
It was very frustrating for me. Because, you know, I don't know. Part of me wanted Hannibal Lecter and Clarice to fall in love and run away together. Because my mental state. You didn't see the movie?
My mental state.
That out of the book, they're actually together. Oh. They have a romantic connection. But in the movie, they changed it because Hannibal and Clarice would never have done that. Like, and Thomas Harris would have known exactly what would happen.
Well, but I'm like buffering mentally.
So like when they make a decision because they don't think the general public is going to like the ending of something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is after having made the whole three movies. And then at the very end, they're just going to be like, I'm going to rip that rug right out of here.
So, yeah.
I don't know. Stuff like that really kind of makes me mad.
Yeah. I don't like, well, I'm kind of a stick in the mud, I think, when it comes to like, that's not how it was originally done. Like, you know, like I think about, I love to watch the movie Troy, mostly because it's a mess, but I, I love it. I say that with love in my heart. It's wonderful and it's so bad, but I don't like how they change the timeline of stuff. The timeline is all wrong, and they have people dying at the wrong times and being killed by the wrong person in the middle of the Trojan War. And it's like, that's not how it happened.
Yeah.
And it's just like, calm down. Who cares? Mm-hmm. Who cares that, like, Ajax died after, like, they sacked Troy? Like, what? Who are you to be, like...
to make that decision.
Yeah, like, wow. Like, yeah, I know, Drew.
No, but I think...
No, I love it.
It makes sense.
Yeah. It's just sort of like, that's not what Homer said happened. And it's just like, but you know what?
It's hard sometimes.
You know? Like, does it, in the scheme of the film, who cares? Does it really make that much of a difference? Except to, like, the two pedantic people that are like... wrong. Like, it's like, no one can stop. Like,
but I think that sort of loops back to what Killian was saying earlier, is that there are sort of two ways for these adaptations to fail.
Yeah.
They can fail the book community that are there for the adaptation.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or they can just fail the movie community by failing to make a movie that
a
makes
decent
sense.
Movie, well, like a story.
Yeah. And I think that, and it is not important to the film Troy if Ajax dies at the right moment. Is it a great sweeping, like, dramatic, you know, adaptation of the story of the Trojan War? Yeah. That's what's more important to
Well,
the,
Emily,
you know,
I would have been upset too.
Thank you.
Because I, yeah,
thank
that
you.
Sucks.
Like, but it's, and so it's, what is the ultimate purpose? And I think some of the sometimes when we're talking about is it a good adaptation or not, sometimes in the darkest recesses of our hearts, the real question is, do I like it or not?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because it's like, it can be good and I can still hate it, or it can be bad or I can still love it.
Yeah.
You know, you know.
Movie, like, we're probably gonna talk a little bit about this at another point, but love, hate kind of situations books and movies and everything. Mm-hmm. It all goes in the same little pot, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I could love a movie, but there's a part of it that I just can't stand, and I wish I could just
take that out,
forward through it at all times.
Yeah.
Never-ending story.
Oh, gosh, yes.
For Pete's sakes.
No.
Anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everybody is like, Artax, no.
Artax.
The entire room just cringed at one.
Yes.
We all felt.
Because it means something to everybody, doesn't
it? It does. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, we all felt a little bit of sadness in our hearts. Just like, no, Artax.
Totally.
How do we feel about the modernization of, because this is something that we touched on a little bit when we were, like, discussing our topic, is, like, the modernization of classics, or, like, things that are rooted in a very specific time period. Mm-hmm. How does that play into whether an adaptation is good, faithful, etc.? You know, I mean, even like things like 10 Things I Hate About You, for example, which is an adaptation of The Taming of the Shrew, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so then, you know, there's the adaptations that, like, are very recognizable as being an adaptation. Mm-hmm. And then there are the ones that kind of flow under the guise of something else. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's an interesting topic for sure.
I
find it interesting when I don't even know it's an adaptation, that I have no idea. There's, like, this little thing that's kind of, like, bothering me in the back of my head, and I'm like, is it or isn't it?
And, like, months later, someone says something, you're
wait,
like, oh
my gosh, really? Like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yes.
No idea. I didn't know. And it's an adaptation of the Odyssey.
Yeah.
Which totally floats. Like, nobody would know unless you're really kind of paying attention to the elements of the story.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so good though.
Well, and so many things get adapted from Shakespeare, which honestly makes sense because you see stage productions of Shakespeare that are set every which way and it's all over the place. So then it makes sense that you can get like The Lion King based off Hamlet, 10 Things I Hate About You based off Taming the Shrew, any number of other examples out there because so many things come back to Shakespeare.
Yeah, absolutely. I particularly like the Shakespeare adaptations that are just like straightforward adaptations. I think, you know, the modernization of some of that stuff can be valuable.
We got to talk really quickly on that subject about Ethan Hawke again, because I'm always talking about Ethan Hawke. He's in the front of my mind at all times, but to that point, one of the best adaptations, straight up adaptations of Shakespeare that I've seen is Hamlet. And Ethan Hawke is Hamlet, obviously. And they do the to be or not to be speech in a blockbuster. And it's so great. The whole thing is so, because all of the dialogue, all of the everything is straight from the source material. And obviously they don't do every single like line because Hamlet's so long. But it's perfectly put in, like, I think it was 1999 or 2000. And it's very situated in that particular time. And they don't try to disguise that, yeah, we're doing Hamlet in like during Y2K, basically.
Okay.
And it's fantastic.
Nice.
It's absolutely fantastic.
Very cool. One of my absolute favorite movies is a Shakespeare film, and it's called Titus. It's about the play Titus Andronicus, which is well known to be Shakespeare's like most violent play of all time. Yeah. There's all kinds of insane things happening in it.
I love Titus Andronicus. This is so wild. Like,
the film is done by Julie Taymor, who also did Frida, the Frida film, and a couple other things. And that movie has Anthony Hopkins as Titus, and it's got a couple other cameo people. Jonathan Rhys-Meyers is in it, and it is just stunning. It is a stunning work, and it is the entire story. Like, I don't think that she even edited at all.
And they even put in, the way that they design scenes mimics classic paintings and all of this kind of stuff. It's really brilliant. It's so weird.
It's like, weird.
But it's so cool.
It's so weird.
But
like, the introduction to it is, you know, they're all coming back from war. But it's like this whole scene where there's this little boy and he's like running around in like this rubble of like basically a war zone, and he's playing with his little green army guys and stuff, and then everybody's like trudging back from a battle. And it's interesting because you start the movie and you're like, what does this have to do with anything? And then it all starts to kind of make sense. So there's like modernizations throughout, but there's also a lot of that, like, this is still Rome and this is still what's going on.
So. Well, and I think that that kind of speaks to, and not to get philosophical, but I think that that kind of speaks to the timelessness of some of those things. Like, war is always war. Like, falling in love is always falling in love. And I think that the depiction of those things, whether it's, you know, your moment of despair in a blockbuster, or which, who among us wasn't there at some point?
Especially like, when they didn't have the movie I wanted.
Yeah, totally. Like, I mean, but it's, those things are, the current audience will see this and be like, oh, I can connect to it because this is based off of my current experience. But it's still, you know, Rome or Ilium or whatever it is.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
So.
Nice. Anybody else have a favorite, absolute favorite?
In terms of Shakespeare adaptation?
Oh, just like overall. Throw something out there.
Devil Wears Prada.
Oh, nice. I haven't read the book. Hmm? I haven't read the book.
The book is good, but the movie, and I, to this day, will never know if it's, you know, all of the choices they made or if it's just Meryl Streep being Meryl Streep. But the sharpness of, of the characters, you needed the stares, you needed the attitude in a way that the book did a good job with capturing. It's a good book. But dear God, Meryl Streep.
I know, right? But just, yeah, blanket statement of that is just, yes, she's amazing. And I've wanted to read the book too, for the very, you know, people, for just what you said. It's just like, oh, it's a good book, but the film really nails it. Like, mm-hmm. So.
I don't know that it's my favorite, but it's one that I just like to talk about. And it's kind of related because the Anne Hathaway of it all. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about Princess Diaries because I love that movie. And I saw that movie so long before I actually read the book for it.
Same, actually.
And I didn't know that it was a book. And then I didn't know that it was a whole book series when I first saw the movie. Or I think even when I saw the second movie, which, as far as I'm aware, completely unrelated to any of the books that follow it. Yeah. Definitely different from, like, first book to first movie, second movie. But I haven't read any of the more recent books where Mia's an adult. But I love that movie so much. So then going and I listened to the audiobook of the first one, which was read by Anne Hathaway.
Oh, nice.
And it was, it being such a different story, it was like, oh. And there's so few adaptations where I've, like, read the book after the movie.
Okay.
And it was one of those, like, okay. It processing those differences mm-hmm. and why those changes happened was a whole time.
I used to be one of those strict, I'm not going to see the movie until I've read the book.
Yeah.
Type people.
I've been like that. And I actually make my kids do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We will read it first and then I'll show them the movie. This only happened one time where my husband showed the kids Coraline before I was able to read it to them.
Yikes.
And I was like, these are grounds for dismissal.
But
anyway.
I try. Sorry, honey,
I love you.
I try to do that too. I was like, I have to read the book first, and then you know. But it is sometimes the case. It's just like, oh man, I didn't know there was a book or
that's
whatever.
That's the thing.
Like,
if you don't know, if you don't know.
It's already like. I think my favorite, and I will restrain myself from talking too much about it. But my favorite adaptation and favorite like movie of all time is The Name of the Rose. Which is adapted from The Name of the Rose by Umberto Eco. It's so great. It's so weird. It's just like, it perfectly captures the weirdness of the situation that's presented in the book, but it's just, it's very much a product of its own time where it's just sort of like, it's 1985, I think. I think is when it was, when it came out. And just the, we're going so hard on making this story, making this movie so movie, we're gonna have fire. We're gonna have like carriages with spikes on them. We're gonna have a labyrinth. We're gonna have a conspiracy, like everything. It's just so odd, but it really is so endearingly devoted to making it as movie as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something to really be like celebrated.
Well, I wonder if that might be one of those movies where, like, now that technology has gotten so much better, that maybe a redo is in
very
order
well could,
kind
yeah.
of situation.
Yeah, because I think there's definitely things that could be done differently mm-hmm. In that particular adaptation. But, yeah, I would love to see what they would do with that now.
Yeah, absolutely. Very cool.
That's an interesting thing, too, is how many things get revisited over the years.
Oh, you know, right.
We're getting the third Wonka movie.
Yeah.
Coming up quick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Probably going, I think it's going to have already happened by the time mm-hmm. the episode comes out. But that idea of, you know, revisiting an adaptation 20 or 30 years after the last one
mm-hmm. yeah.
and seeing, you know, what themes of the book are still relevant, how technology and just modern cinema would change how these things are demonstrated.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That I'm really looking forward to.
Well, another one that we see a lot of and that we're like going to see more of, I'm sure, like the Oz books, because The Wizard of Oz was this whole series. The movie that everyone knows, very different story.
Oh, yes.
Very, oh,
like,
yeah.
Very different. Yeah. But then you had like Wicked was a book that spun off from that. And now that has a musical and it's going mm-hmm. to have a movie. And how all of that adaptation takes that original source material and then just ties it knots.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you get Mean Girls that started with a nonfiction book of like the Queen Bees and Wannabes.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And then
and
then became a movie and then became a musical and is now becoming a movie based on the musical.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like how Fun Home was an autobiography that became a musical. Yeah.
All right, so I have a list of what Reddit thinks are great adaptations.
Okay.
Maybe we could talk about these a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, let's see.
So we've got Silence of the Lambs. Was that a great adaptation?
I can't say that because I haven't read the books, but it was a great movie.
I think it was very well done.
Okay.
I think they did a great job. The books are amazing, by the way, and if you haven't read the books, they're great. If you're into that kind of thing.
It is
not
long,
for everybody.
It has been a long standing on my list of to read. So
yeah, absolutely. I think the characters are good. The way that they did the story is amazing. I mean, it's kind of an iconic movie, right?
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally.
You show somebody with that mask and everybody just knows exactly what we're talking about.
Even I haven't seen the movie and I still know the mask.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
I feel like it's going to be a running theme with this list. It's going to be like, yeah, I've heard of this. Yeah. Never seen it, never read it.
Oh. All right. Lord of the Rings.
Love it.
Fantastic.
So that's kind of what I was referring to earlier about, like, here we are, we're going to make this exactly to the book, and we're going to go absolutely bananas with it, and we're going to make this epic thing, and then it's going to be at least 3.5 hours for each section of it.
It's like 11 and a half hours to watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I do once every other month.
I think
good for you.
It is beloved, and I think that is a great adaptation.
I saw it in theaters, and like I liked it. I couldn't compare it to the books. I've still never read the books. I can't get through them to save my life.
I remember seeing it. My dad was like, "You guys have to watch this. You've got to watch this. Like Lord of the Rings. It's like a huge deal." And I was like, "Okay, Dad, whatever." And so Saturday morning, it's like, "Fine, let's watch Lord of the Rings." And so we sit down, and I was like, this is the greatest piece of art I've ever seen in my entire life.
Right.
And I gotta know what happens after this battle. And now we're in the Shire. And it was just, it was like, well, this is my whole day now.
Yes.
Because I have to, like, I have to know. Yeah.
You have to prepare for that.
It's fabulous.
I do have to ask something based off this, though. As someone who hasn't read the books and then I haven't seen what I'm gonna ask about. As people who love Lord of the Rings, what did you think of the Hobbit movies?
Awful.
Pass.
I mean, I love everything about the idea that they were that it was made. I don't think it was completely necessary to do it in that particular way.
Yes.
Because, like, oh my goodness, really?
Yeah.
Seems to be the overwhelming answer whenever I ask people about it.
But most people have said
granted,
that,
I'm biased because I love the animated Hobbit from, like, whatever the heck that was. It was like, I mean, I think that it was. It came out before I was born in 1980,
and
maybe around there. Yes, and it's wonderful, and I love the music, and I sing it loudly, and I make my children watch it, and they like it, and it's all good. And we read the book first, just saying.
That's good.
All right, so Fight Club. Anybody read Fight Club and watched the movie besides me?
I read it a long time ago, probably before I should have. the movie was good, too.
Okay,
yeah.
I think they... It was spot on.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good.
Yep.
Really well done.
It's another one that's on my list.
Okay. All right. Bad adaptations. We have The Golden Compass, which is an excellent book. The series is fantastic. They did with that movie, and you talked about this already, the Hollywooding, the making it so the drama and the dramatic effect and everything was too much.
Yes.
And there was no way that they were going to be able to keep that going. I mean, hello, didn't happen.
Although I will say the HBO series nailed it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I have to check
that out.
The HBO series
did good.
His Dark Materials did a really, really good job. I haven't seen season 3.
I need to
go back and finish that.
So this is a situation when we're thankful that somebody redid something.
Boom. And gave it the length of show that it needed, because it gets 10 episodes per book.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
As opposed to 100 minutes.
Yeah, excellent.
Nice.
All right, Aragorn. As a person who absolutely loved the books.
Dumpster fire.
I wanted to love that movie. I walked in with a smile on my face, and I did not have it when I left.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has the makings of a great, great movie. I don't know what happened there. I really don't.
I could not. It's one of the darkest regrets of my life is seeing that movie.
Yeah. One of my friends absolutely loved the series. And same thing, Nicole, like, wanted to love the movie. And she was like, I hate this. It's awful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also have I Am Legend on this list.
Never seen or read?
I haven't seen or read, but I have heard people say, like, yeah, no. Okay. Big miss. Yeah.
I watched the movie, didn't read the book. Probably should do that.
Yeah.
Was it a decent movie?
The movie was pretty good.
Okay.
I thought, but then again, having not read the book, it could be
sure.
a complete mess, which mm-hmm. is what it sounds like to me.
Mm-hmm.
How about the Polar Express? Should we talk about the Polar Express?
I hate this movie in concept. I've never actually seen it. I loved this book when I was a kid. And when they announced they were making it a movie, I'm like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I have refused to see it ever since. But like, it's wildly popular. People come in asking for it constantly mm-hmm. from, you know, November through the end of December every year. I just refuse to watch it.
Yeah, I've seen it once, just a few years back. I've never read it. It was solid. I enjoyed it as a holiday movie.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I mean, I think the animation is creepy. I think that there, you know, there's like a vagrant person on top of the train in one scene that's a little bit weird and slightly frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Hanks is everybody. Everybody. And I like him, and that's fine. But like, really? We couldn't have gotten somebody else
yeah.
to do something besides yeah. the children's role? My children love the Hot Chocolate song, and we have to listen to it all the time this time of year. So, yeah. I am not the audience that movie was intended for. I like the book.
Mm-hmm.
My kids like the movie. So I'm going to like say I have mixed feelings on that
mm-hmm. one. Yeah. Yeah.
I think this is one thing that we talked about it a little bit before we really started recording, but like there's so many ways this conversation can go. So many different topics we can pull out of this and talk about in more detail.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably going to be something we do in the future.
Yeah, it's easy to say that this is just the beginning.
Yeah.
And we'll probably come back to this at another time.
I would sure. also yeah. like to know what anyone out there listening, like, what are your thoughts? What do you look for? What are your movies or books that you're like, yes, this was great. No, this wasn't. Because I'm always, I want to know what other people think too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. a good idea.
So
I like that.
Shoot us an email.
Let us know what you think. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Distracted Librarians.
If you have any questions or suggestions, feel free to reach out to us at distracted@btpl.org.
Until then, keep those pages turning and those screens lighting up.
We'll catch you in the next episode.